This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Anderson, Agostino & Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Agostino & Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Welcome back to the latest Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. Pete Sampson, joined by Tim O'Malley and Tim Priester.
Hey.
Back after being off the podcast for a couple weeks.
It's been a few weeks.
Saturday night was just that dramatic. He's come out of semi-retirement to talk about Notre Dame Stanford. O'Malley and I were there. Tim, you watched the game from home. The game had a little bit of everything, I think, for Notre Dame, good and bad. It had Notre Dame coming out and, I think, trying to get into the fourth quarter. I thought they showed, I know people complain about the play calling. I am not one of those people. I think it had some of what Brandon Wimbush does well, running the ball, and some of what he doesn't do well with the inaccurate passing. I thought that the defense continues to play fairly consistently. Special teams were a little bit all over the place. And then in some ways, the one score game dynamic continued even in a non-one score game, because Notre Dame's winning in the fourth quarter, and then within 5 minutes it's completely blown open and Notre Dame's sitting there at 9-3 at the end of the year.
I have two ways of looking at the approach. One, I'm the person that always says run the ball early so you can run it late. They did try to run the ball early. It just didn't work. So I can't fault that. I don't know about the and it's a stated game plan. This isn't we're not just interpreting this. The game plan was to get the game into the fourth quarter. I don't know if you need to get the game into the fourth quarter if you're Notre Dame and Stanford. Think about that game 3 weeks ago. Does Notre Dame go in there and think, we got to get the Stanford team we're favored to beat into the fourth quarter, man. We got to find a way. Why not just go out and dominate your quote-unquote nameless, faceless opponent that is irrelevant to you?
I found that to be a frustrating low barring of what Notre Dame football has been this year.
I don't understand why that would be the philosophy.
And we're not making this up. That was the game plan.
I don't understand why that would be your philosophy. But I do want to reiterate a couple things. I think defensively, I mean, they came out and did a really nice job. They bottled up Bryce Love early. The safety play over the course of four quarters, though, was not good enough. And, you know, when you come to play calling, tell me what plays you're going to call when your quarterback's 11 for 28 or 11 for 29, whatever he was.
And I don't even think it's what he doesn't recognize when he has to recognize.
He doesn't.
Pre-snap, and there's adjustments to be made, and it's a major issue.
It's astonishing to me that after 11 starts, he is arguably a worse quarterback when it comes to reading defenses than he was at the beginning of the season.
That would have been frustrating regardless for Notre Dame, but I think the frustration is compounded by KJ Costello, who's making his fourth or fifth start, doesn't really have any experience. And during the broadcast, and David Shaw said this to us after the game, they put so much on him at the line of scrimmage. The fact that a guy who is that inexperienced can have that kind of a handle on it and then finish 14 of 22 for 176 and four touchdowns. Now, was he perfect? No. I mean, the touchdown to Irwin was late, made a competitive catch. The touchdown to Whiteside was a total duck that got caught. But he also made some good throws along the way, too, and did not commit a turnover, which obviously was critical to Notre Dame's undoing.
If you're a Notre Dame fan, this is what happened in the press box when KJ Costello was throwing touchdowns. That is the first three-touchdown game of KJ Costello's career. That is the first four-touchdown game of KJ Costello's career and the first for a Stanford quarterback since Kevin Hogan against Notre Dame in 2015. That is what's frustrating about the Notre Dame defense at this point. They didn't play a terrible game. I do take issue with the turnovers lost the game because, yes, they contributed greatly to it, but, you know, you can stop the other team from scoring when there's a turnover, and that is what a good defense does. You don't have to
That was one of the most disappointing things, because going into this game, Notre Dame had a significant advantage statistically over the course of 11 games, sides of the ball.
Even Miami, they were playing good defense after turnover. Right. Sometimes they just couldn't come back from where they were.
So I think it was 4 of 5 in the red zone they scored touchdowns. That wasn't something the defense had done all year. You know, I think we're going to take questions in segment two, and people want us to provide them with the answers as to why it has collapsed. And I'm not sure, I mean, other than going across the board and pointing at this, I mean, it is an across the board accusation as to why this team lost two of its last three games.
I mean, I think it's a little bit of everything. And I think that's really one of the big frustrating points for Notre Dame fans is it's not so much the going 9-3. It's the fact that the way that they ended the season doesn't give you a lot of confidence that it's going to be better than 9-3 next year. So when this is...
Yeah.
That to me is a real alarm bell for the program. Because 9-3 this year, I think, is fine. Before the year...
Without the Miami blowout, Noah would blink at 9-3.
Yeah.
It was just an embarrassing game.
I mean, before the year, I would say, I don't know, 80% of Notre Dame fans would take 9-3. And this has nothing to do with 4-8. I'm not mentioning that at all. I'm not saying they improved by five games, so I think that's a ridiculous way to view things. But the frustration and the concern has to be the way that you ended and what leaves off this team, what's coming back. Is there really an indication that you're going to be better than 9-3 next year? I can't find many of those.
Numbers coming back are great, but your point is well taken that Mike McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson were really the heart of the team and why they were so good for 2 months and in playoff contention.
It's a once in a generation left side of an offensive line. How can they be better than 9-3 when they play Michigan, Stanford, at Virginia Tech, Navy, Florida State, USC, Stanford? How are you?
You're right. It's tough to get a better. No, they had a tough schedule this year too. But Brian Kelly said when you asked him, Pete, a couple weeks ago, are you regressing? Is the team not playing as well? And he called it nonsense. Here's the first three games touchdown score. Just offense, defense, special teams. 15-6 in favor of Notre Dame. Next three games, 16-5. Next three games, 18-9. And the final three games, 6-12.
Yeah. It's a team that was in reverse at the end of the year. And it's hard to pick out exactly why that happened. I think that part of it is teams saw enough of Notre Dame's offense to be like, you know, we're going to stack the box and see what happens. We're not going to try to play them balanced. Because in October, and I think we talked about it on this podcast, and I tweeted out and written about it, the way that teams were defending Notre Dame's run game was insane. It made no sense to play, just like have five guys in the box and hope that your one linebacker who's there with no help at all is just going to be able to tackle Josh Adams and maybe also Brandon Wimbush. Teams finally got smart about that, and Stanford put seven guys in the box. On top of that, I think that Notre Dame's defensive talent level in the secondary got exposed in a way that we had been talking about a lot this year. But I think teams finally were like, okay, we're going to pick on these guys. We're going to throw up 50-50 balls and see what happens. And we had sort of been waiting for that to happen all year, and I couldn't figure out why teams weren't trying to just chuck it deep and see what happens. Stanford finally did it. And even during the broadcast, Herb Street said when he talked to Stanford's OC that Stanford's approach was, we think we can make a lot of plays against this secondary, the corners and the safeties. There's just a lot there. And what do they come out with? First, they go at Jalen Elliott, and then they go at Nick Coleman, and they just kept going at those guys all night.
And with their size at wide receiver, it played very well for them. To accentuate what you said, Tim, statistically, the first 34 quarters of the year, Notre Dame outscored its opponents 355-139. The last 14 quarters, they were outscored 123-69. I mean, that's 3.5 games they scored 69
points. It is a puzzling turnaround, but I guess if it comes down to you can't adjust. It's not that, and I think this is a point where everybody's just going to jump on, well, why couldn't they adjust? I do think they tried to adjust to the way they're being played and that the personnel wasn't there offensively.
If your quarterback is 11-29.
Quarterback couldn't adjust, and the safeties couldn't adjust athletically. The corners, other than Julian Love regress for Sean Crawford, not to make an excuse because it's a player I like, I think that Sean Crawford, after 2 years of missing any activity of football, he wore down as the season went on, especially he was playing a ton of snaps. I don't think people realize how many snaps Sean Crawford plays. There was one game where he didn't play many snaps.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't playing a ton, and then he played 80 against Navy. So that he would have been a player susceptible to the Navy hangover, which you don't really say about corners a lot, but he saw his basically work rate or workload triple in 1 week.
I think he'll be a better player as he's back
yeah.
from more removed from injury. Julian Love obviously had a very good year, an excellent year in terms of playmaking. Nick Coleman played better than I thought he would, but the other safety position was as bad as we thought as the season progressed, and everybody got it.
I wish that I'd written or explored this issue on Saturday night, but like the Justin Reed pick, it was Frank Bunkum.
Yeah, it was Bunkum.
Who makes that play in safety for Notre Dame? They don't have a player who can do that. And Frank Bunkum is a guy that Notre Dame passed on in recruiting. Justin Reed is a guy they really wanted but didn't get. I think at the back end of the defense, especially, I mean, safety for sure. I think Troy Pride can be a really good college player. But Nick Coleman, Jalen Elliott, Devin Studstill, that's just not good enough right now. But there's not really a solution on the roster.
Well, we'll have months to talk about this one. But one solution is the best corner. Could have to move it. If Troy Pride and Dante Vaughn and Nick Coleman. I don't think so.
I don't think you can do that.
I don't think so either. You'd have to have Dante Vaughn become the corner we thought he could be this year, next year, and better. You'd have to have Troy Pride just ascend. And you'd have to have Sean Crawford do what I said he would do.
And Nick Watkins come back for a fifth year.
And Nick Watkins come back and be a balanced backup for a fifth year. Or fight with Dante Vaughn for the spot. That's the only way to do it.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see.
That is the roster way of figuring this out and adding Allen.
It would be nice for Nick Watkins to evolve and become, you know, the kind of player that you expect him to become at cornerback. Bowl games, fellas.
That's Orlando or Orlando. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to, the Citrus Bowl or the Camping World Bowl, depending on, I believe, the Big Ten sending somebody to the Orange Bowl, I think has some, that's how the Citrus Bowl can come into play for Notre Dame, but it's January 1st is the Citrus Bowl, and I think Camping World,
28th.
It's the 28th, yeah. So it's Orlando or Orlando. I think if I was Notre Dame, I'd rather play in the Citrus Bowl because it's a January 1st game. It's the SEC opponent game, so you could get LSU or, I don't know, I think it'd probably be LSU at that point. Like, that's interesting to me, even though they played just a few years ago. But, New Year's 6 off the table at this point.
It's just depressing. 17 days ago, who are they going to play? Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma, maybe Wisconsin gets in. Now it's,
will I be watching the Rose Bowl parade in person this year? Or now, will I be going to...
That's nonsense right there. It's
just a wild ride with my kids. Yeah, it's a rapid fall in terms of where Notre Dame, the stature of Notre Dame's program relative to the postseason over the last few weeks. And I think the bowl game for me at least is still highly interesting. I know that it is also very deflating to go there, but what happens with Wimbush I think is really going to set the tone for next year. That I think is going to be very indicative of where stuff can go. I'm not saying that, you know, they need to turn the page completely and, you know, Quentin Nelson should sit out the game, but there are some younger players that maybe didn't get a whole lot of work. But most importantly, I need to see Brandon Wimbush take a step forward. It's 11 starts, 7 of them 50% or less.
He started 11 games. What's going to happen between now and then that's going to make him a better quarterback than the 11 starts should have?
That's a real issue because I don't know what that would be.
He had an occasional good start. He could have that again. Yeah. He had some good starts, so that he would have to have another good start. He could have a Michigan State game.
He completed more than 50% of his passes three times.
He has to do it with that. That would make it a better start if he does that again.
You know, I mean, I think there's appeal to Citrus Bowl on January 1, Notre Dame LSU. I'm not so sure that Iowa State draws a lot of attention on December 20th. Regardless of the name of the bowl, I'm not sure December 28th against Iowa State. Not to put down Iowa State in the least, because Matt Campbell's done a great job there, but... Notre Dame LSU January 1, and I think that's very possible. At 9-3, I think Notre Dame is still somewhat worthy of that.
I'm curious. Yeah, I know. Their body of work is. They're disappointed.
They're ranked 15th.
Yeah, their body of work is totally fine this year. It's the fall from grace in the last 3 weeks that has, you know, ruined it for a lot of people. There's nothing wrong with their body of work this year. Period. I just think that it's such a disappointing end. It's hard to get over something like that.
Two road games at the end of the year that...
All of us sitting here on the podcast are writing things out. None of us went above 9-3. I actually had 9-3 with losses to Michigan State, Miami, and Stanford. And I'm complaining about how much you lost to Miami and Stanford right now. Right. So it just... The bad look of the Miami game And you got to be able to beat Stanford once in a while. I guess if you take the aggregate of the Stanford, David Shaw, Brian Kelly thing, I wrote about this, it drives me crazy. If you're a Notre Dame alum, fan, Brian Kelly backer, Brian Kelly anything, 2-5 against David Shaw.
In a quarterback, and Pete said, you know, fifth career start, you got a banged up Bryce Love. There's so many things pointing in that direction. But it gets back to what we said when they were 8-1. You can't lose two of the last three. You just can't.
And they managed to do so.
We might talk about this and burning up the boards, but I am curious, Pete, if I have a feeling they are going all in for this bowl game for the seniors, and because Brian Kelly desperately wants to finish 10-3 and he cannot finish 1-3.
Yeah.
So I think there'll be very few looks. The practices they always do.
Yeah.
I think there'll be very few game day, let's see some young guys, see what they can do. I don't think there'll be any of it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Because to lose three of your last four versus finishing 10-3, and like if you want to nitpick the fact that a 10 wins, but or 10 wins, yeah, but really like 10 wins is 10 wins.
10 wins is 10 wins.
That's
especially LSU. If it's LSU, something like that, that would be
full credit would have to be due there. I agree with what you're saying, and we've got a bunch of questions from readers about guys sitting out bowl games. Like that's been something that's popped up on the board and Twitter. I don't get that at all.
I don't see it from any of these guys
either.
There's
nothing about this roster that makes me think, oh, this guy's going to sit out the game.
I don't think there's anything in Quentin Nelson's DNA that says that he's going to sit out a bowl game.
Yeah, so I think they'll be fine with that. Citrus Bowl, LSU, that would be intriguing enough for me to cover for sure. And I think it would be intriguing enough for a lot of Notre Dame fans to watch, despite what happened on Saturday. So on that note, we'll spin it forward. Segment 2, Irish Illustrated Insider, coming up next.
Irish Illustrated Insider is brought to you by Anderson, Augustino, and Keller, attorneys at law, with offices in South Bend, Indiana, serving the local community's legal needs with a diverse and innovative group of lawyers. Let their team be your edge on legal matters. Contact the lawyers at Anderson, Augustino, and Keller at 574-288-1510 or visit their webpage at aaklaw.com.
Segment 2 of Irish Illustrated Insider, burning up the boards. Our first question from Port ND. 8 years into BK era, what is Notre Dame's identity and what do you hang your hat on?
It's a good question, and I don't really have an answer for you, honestly.
Next question.
It's evolving. I mean, it's evolving. They became a run-oriented team this year.
Yeah.
And then that's good. That's a positive.
I want them to stick with that. Brian Kelly got some sustainability questions throughout the year. I want him to keep that sort of stubborn edge that O'Malley, you made this point in the first segment. I thought it was fine that they tried to pound the ball in the first half against Stanford, because that's the way to move the safeties out. So then when you throw a crossing route to Stefferson, there's nobody there. When two defenders run into each other. So I hope that's the identity. Defensively, I like what Mike Elko is doing there. I think it's a fundamentally sound developmental defense where a lot of guys got better on defense in a way that I don't think that we've said in previous years. Like you could just pick out a half dozen guys and be like, wow, Tavon Coney, Khalid Kareem.
How about Jerry Tillery in the 12th game of the season?
How about those three tackles for loss, Tim O'Malley?
He's on the cusp, Pete.
So, yeah, I feel like the identity on defense in year 8 was guys got better. And, not to filibuster here, but I do think that is one aspect where people get upset about, this is year 8, come on. What happened the previous 7 years doesn't mean very much to me compared to Mike Elko is here. Guys are getting better on defense. There's a commitment to the running game that needs to continue. So the fact that that wasn't the case often in years 1-7 doesn't really mean a whole lot to me.
I think they need better players at safety, and they're really going to recruit them. They have one coming in probably. That's crucial. Otherwise, it doesn't matter how sound you are because you'll give up some stuff against the athletes in college football, which is why they gave at least one touchdown pass and usually two in every game this season. I like the sound approach. There weren't guys running loose all year. Offensively, I've stated ad nauseum what I like for Notre Dame football, but here's one issue I have with Brian Kelly sticking with it. They lost the two guys that made it absolutely 100% obvious that you have to become a power running team this year. Robert Hainsey and Josh Lugg, or Liam Eikenberg in some way, will be the new guys. So do you stick with that? And are your young tight ends that we all like as sophomores going to be good enough in two tight end sets to value the running game without Josh Adams, with Dexter Williams, who either was really hurt and we have no idea what kind of the injury was, or he cannot run through injuries like Josh Adams did? Will they be able to stick with it with the personnel? Because Equanimeous St. Brown, Kevin Stefferson, Chase Claypool.
Yeah, you got to get the ball.
Those guys are pretty good. I know they don't have anyone to give them the ball, but I think they could be caught going into August wondering what their identity is going to be again.
Yeah. Well, I think as long as Chip Long is around, there's a great chance that they stick with it. But you can remember Chip Long also saying, you know, when I have an offensive line like this, yes, I'm going to run the football.
Yeah.
He may not feel that secure with the offensive line next year.
They can't be as good.
No, there's no way.
But they have good players. Like Josh Lugg is going to be good, we believe. Liam Eikenberg.
Mustafer is going to be a pretty dominant center. I would like to think Bars is, but I'm not sure that he will be.
I'd like to think Kramer, well, it doesn't matter because he's playing Nelson's position, but I'd like to think Kramer will be better at guard than he was at tackle, assuming they make that move. Of course, your drop-off is automatic. It's not his fault.
Yeah,
I guess I think we all love the idea that this is the new identity, and I could see them more readily abandoning it next year.
To address the defense, as Pete did, the productivity along the defensive line really, at times, it was pretty astonishing this year, based upon the way we evaluated that personnel through the spring, through the summer, and going into the season.
Khalid Kareem was a new human
being. Khalid Kareem was really, really good. Andrew Trumbetti was really good a pretty significant amount of the time.
Yeah, I thought it was a good group. I mean, I think of all the positions, what position got better from the start of the year to the end of the year? Defensive line would be number one. Yeah. Receiver would be up there as well, but for different reasons.
Bonner was not necessarily a standout, but he was productive. He certainly held, when he was at his worst, he held his own.
I think it was it's evidence that defensive depth is a real thing, because they had it on the defensive line. They did not have it at linebacker. They did not have it at corner. They did not have it at safety.
You know who played well in the was Niles Morgan in his last regular season game, after I think he had to fight through it too. He went down early. Yeah. And that was we didn't really get into the nuts and bolts of Stanford, but that was a nice game to see from a senior in his final.
And obviously you transition at linebacker, but Tavon Coney is a pretty darn good one to build around.
Yeah, no question. Me Irish? Will Wimbush still be honing his skills at starting quarterback when Notre Dame plays Stanford next season? If not, which quarterback on the roster needs to hone their skills to at least overcome Wimbush and start? Book, Davis, or Jerkovic?
If he's honing his skills still in midseason, there will be a major issue. You know, I think he had a really disappointing, I wouldn't say year, because he was so good running the ball for two months. He had a really disappointing November, to the point where people say, why are you putting it all on Wimbush? I'm going to say, yeah, I'm putting most of it on Wimbush on the offense, actually.
Absolutely.
He's a starting quarterback at Notre Dame. He's a junior, whatever. I am putting it on him. I haven't given up on his ability in 9 months to become and I don't mean a good passer. He's a below 50% passer. If Notre Dame can run the ball and they have these weapons and he can complete 57% of his passes and not miss these incredible misses that have to be mental. They have to be mental. He did not miss these in any practice.
The corner route in the end zone against Navy, when the throw was 10 to 12, 15 yards underthrown.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the little flub pass, two passes to Mack, the one right before that going the same direction against Navy, and then, of course, you got to hit Mack for the first down to make it easy on you against Navy. There, the Equanimeous St. Brown was open by 12 yards in every direction against Stanford. The throws are not throws he should ever make again. I cannot believe Brandon Wimbush is going to practice for 9 more months and still make those throws. So, like,
bounce the stay route where it's just throw it on a horizontal line. That can't one hop to receivers.
No. If he doesn't, he can throw a million passes. If he doesn't get his head right, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the footwork is. If he doesn't get his head right, he's not going to complete those passes.
I totally agree, but I feel like in 9 months of Brandon Wimbush, he can do that.
Yeah. Right.
I think Notre Dame's next quarterback could be better than Brandon Wimbush and Chirkovic, but I think Brandon Wimbush is the guy you're riding next year.
Who had worse defensive recognition, Wimbush or Zaire? But at least with Zaire, you knew that he had some accuracy.
Yeah. The Zaire before the injury was just different than the Zaire after the injury. I know he wasn't great against Virginia, but you weren't looking at him thinking, man, this guy can't complete these passes.
That yeah, I mean, I agree with what you guys are saying, and this was also mentioned in the broadcast that Herbstreit brought it up. Like, it's mental. Like,
it's completely mental.
Brandon Wimbush has a mental block right now that he needs to climb over or remove or just get past.
And he needs to stop worrying about what people think of him and going to Twitter and talking about it, because it doesn't do you any good.
That's weird.
As Notre Dame's quarterback.
That's a weird thing to do as a quarterback, I think. All right. BL Casper, and I just can't see Coach Kelly getting through 14 games to a national title. What real changes should alumni be pushing for the university to do in order for a title to return to Notre Dame?
I mean, I guess it's hard for me to see the 14 games to the national title, too, because I thought it was humanly possible this year if Auburn had taken on Alabama or something like that. That all worked out. But what changes can you make? I mean, I think Brian Kelly will probably end his career at Notre Dame after 9 or 10 seasons, and he'll be the only coach even close to that amount of time that didn't win a title after Notre Dame. I mean, after 5 years at Notre Dame, coaches that come to Notre Dame either are gone after 5 or 6 years and they won it.
While averaging like 4.5 losses per season.
Right, it'll be... I'm trying to think of what prospects they have with him over the next 2 years to go through 14 years. So he'd have to finish 11-1, go to the playoffs, and win 2 games.
So many, I mean, Notre Dame's coaches have either won a national title.
Or been fired.
Or been, like, a little bit above 500 or I guess, worse. You haven't had a coach like
the
Kelly,
only
right?
Ground, right?
The guy that goes 8-4. The previous coaches that were fired were going 6-5, like, during 11.
Yeah, they were, like, 55% winning percentage.
Yeah, we are now, for the record, comparing them to Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly is 66.6%, which is... not going to end up 11-1 most likely. But I mean, I don't know. The problem with sort of looking at it as a national championship or bust is like, well, you don't really have any control over what's going on at Alabama or Clemson or Oklahoma or Ohio State.
But getting to the playoffs, let's eliminate that. Because let's say get to the playoffs.
Like, okay, so you have control getting to the playoffs is the new national championship.
I agree. I think right now that has to be it. Because then you take your chances.
Yeah. That's fair.
You can't say Brian Kelly fails if he doesn't go 14-0 for Notre Dame 1 year.
Yeah,
they go to the playoffs next year and 2 years later with an 8-5 mixed in the requisite, I think that it would be fine, right?
I agree with you on that. I don't really know what changes they need to make other than they need to have a quarterback who can effectively run the passing game, and right now they don't have a guy that they can trust in that position.
I can't believe they had a quarterback that could run that well, and offense became the problem at the end of the year. It's just, it's shocking.
Which gets back to the original question here, I guess the previous question. So who's it going to be at quarterback? I mean, will he just flat stick with Wimbush? You've got a big-time quarterback coming in. I'm not sure Avery Davis is the type of quarterback that you want.
We don't know, So Wimbush is what? Let's say he's better. He has to be, obviously. He would have to be better than this year. Let's say he's playing like he does against Temple and Michigan State most of the time. He's throwing like that and running like that. It would have to be, I don't see why he would go away from him, because you take your chances with your team in that manner. Mm-hmm. And I don't see Kelly pulling a plug on Wimbush when they're 8-3 or something like that, if you're 8-3 team.
You cannot underestimate what he adds to the rushing attack in college football. You can't. It's significant.
He's going to roll with Wimbush through 2018, I would think. Unless things go terribly wrong, obviously. But that's clear to anyone with a quarterback that things go terribly wrong.
You think about if somebody told you, and of course the percentage is significant, but if somebody told you that Brandon Wimbush ended the season with 14 rushing touchdowns, 16 passing touchdowns.
6 interceptions, right?
And 6 interceptions. Yeah. You'd say, damn, he had it, right? 30 touchdowns and 6 interceptions.
Yeah, what was the fumbles loss for play 3? So 30-9. That's
is really, really good, which is why he won't. Which is why he'll stick with it.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, Jerkovic is the best talent out of these three at the bottom of the list. And, he's not I don't think you're riding year nine with your first coat of paint with an 18-year-old quarterback when you have a senior.
Yeah. I mean, I think this would be my perspective on what the quarterback situation will look like next year. They'll roll with Wimbush, and if he has games like he did on Saturday, they will have confidence up in the backup to pull him.
Who?
Not in an Ian Book kind of way at Miami where it's gone so bad that you don't have a choice. I'm saying if there's a game where he struggles, then they can put in Book, Davis, or Jerkovic. I don't know which one it's going to be. If it's in November, it's probably Jerkovic. If it's in September, it's probably Book. But I just think that they need to invest a lot more time in making sure their backup is ready to go next year than they were able to this year. Understandably so. And it's not a criticism that like, well, why didn't you have Ian Book ready? But whoever the backup quarterback needs to be better than what Ian Book was this year. And I thought Ian Book was okay. I mean, he came in, they won with him at North Carolina, but I think he had two picks at North Carolina. Am I right on that?
Yeah, he had a red zone one. And
then obviously the terrible one at Miami. So I don't, I think Ian Book has shown some things that are interesting to me, but I'm not sure if he's shown enough that I was like, well, this is a change he would make.
He had two picks in North Carolina. Just check. Tim, I want to get your opinion on when Wimbush went out, Book came in. Did you think he would just stay in that drive when they were moving a little bit? I mean, the game had gotten, they were down 11 and had gotten a little away from them. They're down 18. Actually, gotten totally away from them.
I don't know that I thought one way or another.
Yeah, I didn't think about it until hindsight. Where I thought, well, they were moving a little. You weren't moving at all with Wimbush. Wimbush had thrown. It wasn't like his pass was tipped for an interception.
When it's a running back, they say they just brought in the other running back. When it's a quarterback, they say he got benched. And I get it. It's the nature of the position.
I'm just thinking. He's trying into something new. Wimbush could not have played worse.
Did you see the Miami? I don't know if you guys had a chance to see the Miami Pittsburgh game. Boy, have I had a chance to see a lot of football games. And at a certain point, Rick pulled Rozier.
You mean he wasn't running draws on Fettered for 15 yards on every play? No. Okay.
Okay. He pulled them, and naturally the announcers are saying he got benched. Well, you need a spark. I don't have a problem with the coach doing that, and I love the thing you love about my Book is his mechanics, and I think he's got a pretty good understanding of the game. He doesn't have any experience, so that's why he gets the pick six against Miami, because that's what young quarterbacks do. But I don't have a problem with a coach staying with a hot-handed quarterback. Why does it have to be so dramatically different than every other position?
That's a preview of our next 9 months of podcast right there. All right, J-Law 1. Which of the following is the highest priority during bowl prep? Quarterback psyche, offensive line play, special team short up, defensive back ball skills.
It's not even close, is it?
Close. Quarterback psyche and everything else will be fine. The offensive line will be fine in bowl prep. The quarterback psyche and issues are actually involved in the offensive line's recent play. Special teams could be short. They are.
It's true.
They really are.
There was a play. Wimbush ended up overthrowing Stepherson in the end zone. I think it was in the second quarter. Mustafa snaps the ball. The other four offensive linemen don't move for like a beat. Harrison Phillips gets in there. Wimbush is flushed out of the pocket. It just, there's not a connection between the quarterback and the line the way that there should be.
The special teams could be shored up. This is interesting because DB ball skills are hard to shore up in 15 days, where Pete was...
not as hard as QB psyche.
I don't think so. Pete, your point about prep bowl prep, it will be very heavy bowl prep for the young players. I just mean the game will be... The week up to the game will be the varsity. But you can shore up the special teams a little because you can go all hands on deck if you want to. If you really want to.
Which they kind of... I mean, when I was watching the film, you see Morgan, Martini... Yeah. Tranquil. It's not like they really held back in terms of the guys they used on special teams, which I thought was good. And that, until C.J. Sanders' fumble, I thought that was a winning performance for Notre Dame special teams because they basically gifted Notre Dame, or not gifted, they created
an easy opportunity,
a red zone opportunity for the offense to take over the 19-yard line, which didn't work. But
two plays, a great punt and a great punt.
Yeah, it was like, it was complementary football between the defense and the special teams. 2 points for the special teams and 1 point for the defense, and the offense couldn't capitalize. Unfortunately, when you fumble a kickoff in a game that's getting away from you, that undoes everything. So, I mean, I thought the special teams, Brian Kelly described them as middling, I think,
Fair to middling.
Fair to middling. I think that's been a fairly accurate depiction of them.
And that's disappointing.
Yeah.
That's disappointing when you... And I know that Brian Polian is a better coach than that, but the bottom line is the special teams were just average at best this year.
Yeah, I don't, there was, and I think that was what was so disappointing about the Sanders fumble, because there was like, okay, this is a game on the road, and the special teams is affecting you in a positive way, and then it just
do they all do time. They not need to look at alternatives for kick return?
It'll be Michael Young. Michael Young next year. It's first thing in the music. Michael Young is the kick returner next year. They must look at alternatives.
Hard to believe that C.J. Sanders had a kickoff return for a touchdown at Stanford.
At Stanford the last time he was there. Ago. Yes. It's a shell of what he was as a kick returner. I don't understand it. It's not all blocking either, because there are three examples this year where he has one guy to beat and the one guy gets him in relatively easily. And two of them. Mr. McGrogue. Seriously, though. Why do these ND teams under Kelly so consistently fail to get up for big games? I recognize the talent gap on different parts of the field. It's real. That being the case, you have to play with focus, determination, attention to detail. This happens so rarely in big spots. Why?
They were winning in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's... You got to start from that premise. Then they absolutely collapse. But this was a game that really... For people to say, like, oh, looks like Notre Dame's going through the motions and they're not emotionally invested, like, I completely disagree with
that. He has two questions in here, because focus, determination, and attention to detail were missing.
Yes.
But the first part, they were definitely up for the game. He had them ready for
the game. Yeah. Stanford's not the issue. Miami's the issue.
Yeah.
Some previous road trips have been the issue.
Over the years. We're not talking about this. Over the years. Why they don't finish in these games? That's still a relevant thing.
Mm-hmm.
As Pete mentioned, it's not a one score game, but it was kind of a one score game. You're in the fourth quarter, and it was a one score game. I don't know. That is a strange. I would not have put that on Brian Kelly. I wouldn't say maybe middle of 2014. I would never think to myself, well, they just can't finish these games off. But Notre Dame lost to Florida State, and they're a program that had bounced back well. That was like them, like 15-4 since the national title loss.
Mm-hmm.
I never would have thought to myself, man, they just can't finish these things out. You know, it was just. But now I definitely think that.
Yeah, I mean, now that you're sitting there at the 9 straight losses of Power 5 ranked teams on the road, the 2-9 record in one score games over the last 11, it's just not. I don't know what the answer to it is, but it's not a healthy place to be.
The answer, I mean, there are multiple answers to the question, right? It's one of those. It's not one answer. Stujo 11, regarding 2018, make the case that Notre Dame will have a better season, 10 wins or more, than this one.
I point to the person next to me to go first.
So, yes. Good luck.
Wait, I thought you were pointing at Priester. I can't make the case. I don't know what... You look at the schedule, Priester, you mentioned already, it's a very difficult schedule. In some ways, it's a schedule that is... It's very backloaded. Notre Dame needs to figure out how to beat Michigan, win, it's a schedule that sets up 7-1 after 8 games. You got Michigan at Virginia Tech. Those will be very challenging games. The other ones are either home or at teams that you should beat. But at the end, you know, you go to Northwestern. I think they're 9-3 this year. Florida State comes here.
There's just enough tricky ones in there that will trip them up.
Syracuse is just weird enough. I think Eric Dungy might be gone, but I'm not positive. But that's just a weird enough opponent, kind of like an anti-Navy.
He beat Clemson. That'll save his job.
Yeah, now I don't know if...
Florida State at home. I mean, look at November.
And then you finish at USC.
Look at November at Northwestern, Florida State, Syracuse at USC.
Tell me how they're going to do
at Northwestern, Florida State, Syracuse at USC.
And right now, everybody here is saying Florida State was terrible this year. Well, what do you think about Miami 12 months ago right now when Notre Dame beat them, for crying out loud? So they have players. That's an awful November again, but I'm supposed to make the case for them to be better. The schedule on paper is harder. I'm not going to dissect it and pretend that anybody except for Ball State and Vanderbilt, I guess at Wake, since they don't have John Wolford anymore. John Wolford was there. Wake would be a...
Wake is a...
Hey, so those three, there's nothing easy after that.
Now, I just noticed something. The bye week is between Pittsburgh and Navy and the Navy games in San Diego. I guarantee you I'm leaving on Wednesday of that week.
Okay. Okay. That wasn't where I thought you were going with that.
What about the conference that afternoon? Yeah. You don't want to be there?
Going to have to handle that. My wife and I are leaving for San Diego on Wednesday of that week.
I can make a case for why I should leave Thursday for that game, and we will have to have a stringer cover Brad Kelly's press conference Thursday.
Advanced scouting.
Make the case, though. I'd say Brandon Wimbush becomes a much better football player. Yeah. He completes 58% of his passes, runs the same way. They're still married to Brandon Wimbush at 58-59%. I'm trying not to top out too high.
Mm-hmm.
With 30 touchdowns and 9 turnovers, that's an offense.
That's an offense
right there.
Second year of Elko,
Derek Allen.
Derek
Allen starts after they start 4-0 because they have to only beat one good team in Michigan, Ball State, Vanderbilt, and Wake. Get him in there. Derek Allen's in.
Pass rush improves.
Alize Mack is a football player on the team, helping and doing things. St. Brown and Stepperson are very good receivers.
Yeah, I think this would be the case. Wimbush is a 58% passer. St. Brown returns, which I think they did well. So you got Claypool, St. Brown, Stepperson. Yes. That's really good. Derek Allen starts at safety. That would be high.
Eventually. You don't have to throw him in right away, right? You've already thrown him in.
No. For the majority of the season, Derek Allen starts. And then, do we want to talk about, would Julian Love at safety be an indication of like, whoa, okay, now I'm talking myself into 10 wins.
They just have so much more depth at corner than they have at safety. That's why we say these things.
In some ways, I feel like Drew Tranquil decides, I'll come back.
Well,
for that's
you
year.
Need that's that. I was just going to say because the linebacking core is a concern. Rebuild, yes.
So there are I guess ways you can make
that
a case.
That is the case. Yeah, the schedule's an issue. The schedules, however, can trend down. I mean, the 2012 schedule before the season, you looked at it and thought, oh great, Notre Dame plays the two top teams in the country on the road. They were not. Right. They were just regular.
Yeah, in the same way Miami this year, you're not like, well, yeah, it looks like an 11-1 team to me.
No one saw that buzzsaw coming. So I think schedules change. But it's impossible to make the schedule comment right now. So it's on Brandon Wimbush. Great. We got it.
Yep.
It's not, going back to what I said a few questions ago, he's not like it's not a finished product. I almost said the worst thing we've heard all year. It's not like it's impossible that Brandon Wimbush is going to become a quarterback.
No, but
if it's mental, he can get over it.
Yeah, but it's also defensive recognition. I think, obviously, mental, that's a huge part of it. Forget the routes and progressions. And when a guy's open, hit him.
No, you're right. That is exactly what happened.
That's how you get to 58%.
Yeah, you hit St. Brown running toward the sideline.
By himself?
I see that he's open. Hit him.
Right.
That's how it happens.
Yeah, there are a bunch of plays like that. All right, next up, Go Fight, Win, Go Irish. Was it the line or Josh Adams who regressed in November? Was Brian Kelly so loyal to Adams that it clouded his assessment of his productivity down the stretch and not giving more carries to Dexter Williams or Tony Jones?
I wish I knew what Williams' injury status was because we found it so strange that he couldn't contribute. Then they got him in against Wake and it looked like he got shot in the leg when he was running. So he was clearly hurt there. We found out that was the thigh. He was fine at the end of the year, though. Against Stanford, he was fine. Unless something happened in the Miami game, as you mentioned, Pete, he was in there running.
Yeah.
So, Navy, I guess I never had the ball against Navy, honestly.
He played one snap.
Yeah, Josh Adams had 100 yards against Navy. I think it was Adams who regressed in November, clearly, and I think Adams is hurt to the point of almost being injured. He has so many little things hurting him.
Yeah, I mean,
he looks like he was an old man that couldn't walk.
There's no doubt. He was dragging himself around the field throughout most of November.
To his credit, in a toughness,
absolutely.
He looked exactly the same at USC last year and ran for like 150 yards.
Right. I don't know that I would say the offensive line regressed. I mean, were they?
I would say Alex Barr struggled.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think his entire season was inconsistent.
Yeah. You know, the Jones thing's interesting because he was healthy at the end, and Jones starts the game against Stanford, at slot, technically. But he was healthy enough to be involved then. It's weird you can't...
I thought Mustafa got better as the season went on. I clearly think Kramer and Hainsey got better as the season went on.
You could see Adams when he would get through the line. He wasn't the same. He just wasn't the same running back. He was exploding through that line. And his cuts in space in October were so much different.
I think that the answer to this question really is teams just figured out how to game plan against Notre Dame. Because Josh Adams, when he gets to the second level and there's nobody there, is really, really fast. When he has to make a cut at the second level because there's a linebacker sitting in the hole. And there, how many times on Saturday night were we watching and there would just be unblocked linebackers? And it wasn't like unblocked in the sense that Notre Dame missed a block.
Right, right.
It was Notre Dame has six guys to block seven. Well, one's going to come unblocked. And that unblocked guy inevitably got to Josh Adams real quickly. Over and over and over.
I guess the second part of this question is, why not give more carries to Williams or Jones?
Well, I tend to agree with. And when you have a bell cow back, I get that. You want to ride him. But over the course of 48 quarters, there are opportunities to get those. Well, what about McIntosh? I mean, McIntosh showed well. I realize he's a smaller back and he's going to have great difficulty running through some of those tackles. But I would agree. And to a large extent, Jones is a somewhat limited back, at least at this stage of his career. But, you know, when you talk about building depth, and we saw him do it on defense, running back is a position where you have an opportunity to build some depth over the course of 12 games.
I mean, think of it, just spin it forward to spring practice. Let's say Josh Adams comes back. You're going to have six scholarship running backs because Jameer Smith is doing early enrollment.
Wow.
What do you do with all these guys?
Hand it to two of them. Go Irish, go, because it's weird. No matter how good the running backs are, Pete, these guys get in because someone's hurt. Deion McIntosh's year is based on
Josh Adams getting injured
and being in blowouts. It's not like they used a four-man bevy of backs to wear people down. Yeah. It was, well, this is the guy we have, and they all ran well. So that's depth, but it's not the right use of depth.
Right.
Final question. Go ahead, Tim.
Go Irish, go five. Is there anything fans can look at and feel good about regarding the 2017 football team that will carry over into 2018?
I mean, if they win 10 games, then...
Yeah, I mean, most of your team's coming back.
Yeah, volume coming back, the defensive line's improvement from, I mean, we were just completely wrong.
The receiving the core.
They were much better.
The receiving core, the running back core, if Adams.
The defensive line could be a perceived as a strength now as opposed to the number one weakness because you figure, I mean, including the drop ends, so you have Dalen Hayes and Julian Aquara, you have Khalid Kareem and Jay Hayes. Bonner's out.
No, I mean, I know what has been said, but...
Yeah, I guess if he told that to the Observer...
Yeah,
it's probably just the case, you know, that he's just...
Who knows? I mean, Stephon Tuitt said he was coming back to
right.
the Observer.
You got Tillery, MTA, Heinisch. It's just a deep... You got a solid two deep all the way across.
Maybe Darnell Yule will be ready to contribute.
Right. There's a two deep a defensive line that you didn't even consider 4 months ago saying... Could be a strength for the 2018 team.
No doubt.
So that would be...
The receiving core, there's...
Receiving core, too. Yeah,
If LZ Mack, I mean, you know, we look at Wimbush and say, okay, where can he improve? Obviously, if Mack can show improvement, he can be a weapon.
Well, I think just tight end in general, like, if you set Mack aside...
Cole Kmet.
And Brock Wright, I think you're going to get something out of those guys that's good. So if that's your tight end... And receiving group, I think that's a really nice group of weapons to work with. And I think the offensive line, instead of being great, will just be good. Like there are a lot of good things to look at. The problem is just like the way the season ended. I understand why right now, Monday, November 27th, nobody wants to look at the good things happening next year when you lost two of your last three.
I'm not sure that the safeties... I'm not sure how much the safeties improve, and that's why you guys mentioning Derek Allen.
Andrew, I'm sticking with the love thing until I'm proven wrong.
How do you move your best corner out of cornerback?
Who does that nationally and pass breakups?
Who does that?
So he gets nine picks this year and next year instead of pass breakups. Quit knocking it down and catch it, Julian. All right, set the Notre Dame record for pass breakups. We should point that out. I'm not sure we did the other day.
Yeah, I mean top five nationally. That's really impressive. He had a great year. So on that note, I think we'll wrap up this post-Stanford Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. We'll be back Thursday talk a little bit more big picture and talk a little basketball too, as Notre Dame will be traveling to Michigan State that night in I believe a top five game. Notre Dame now ranked fifth in the AP poll in hoops, so should be a fun one. So we'll get into hoops a little bit more and obviously talk a lot more football, probably talk some recruiting as well. So all that coming Thursday, the next Irish Illustrated Insider.